Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Craig Burley, Nader Manua, Frank LaBeouf and Ali Moreno will be joining us shortly. But we kick today's show off with the opening game of the Women's Euro 2022 tournament, which saw the hosts beat Austria by 1-0. Beth Mead striking the 16th minute just crossed the line and was enough to give England an opening victory. For more on this, let's head to Kay Murray and the team.
The first game of the Euros is underway. Well, it's actually been done right now. England with a 1-0 win over Austria. Beth Mead's goal, the difference in the first half. And that was all she wrote for that game. There's plenty to talk about, though, with myself, Kay Murray, Emma Hayes, and also Steffi Jones here with you in the studio. Emma, I want to talk about big picture takeaways from this game first.
Well, I think 3 points, because as Steffi will mention time and time again, that opening game as host nations is a tough one. A game of two halves, but England's shown that they can defend. And I think the decision to leave Greenwood out and play with Williamson at the back is a justified one. I think the real question is the strength in depth going to hamper or help England? The three changes today I don't think help the team, so I think making the right decisions is going to be something for Serena Wiegmann to learn from. And the last part I would have to say, for all the possession they had, 60%, only 5 chances on goal, England going to have to be a little more prolific inside the box if they're going to go on and win the tournament.
On the flip side though, for Austria, yes, they started with a loss, but surely they can take some positives out of this, Steffi.
For sure. I mean, we knew that they could defend. I have said before the game they have 13 players playing in the Bundesliga, so they would try to keep the game tight, which they did. They've been passionate, they've been really trying to defend. They had some individually bad choices, passes, which made it possible that England scored also.
What are you saying? England didn't create. It was the result of Austria's poor defending.
Well, that's still, when you do that, you still score, and it's fine. But I just feel like Austria showed in the last 10 minutes that was an open game and they had their chance also. So that's what you take out of it. You know, just losing 1-0 is not too high. England was the favorite team and Austria doesn't really have a game changer. They have one.
Which is why they have to wait for 10 minutes before time, because I think if they do that any sooner, perhaps the scoreline will be different, maybe.
No, but it's just like they might just get one or two chances and they have to be it.
Yeah, so anyone coming up against them next, Northern Ireland and Norway, have got to be careful. Let's talk about individual performances. Which player stood out for you?
You know what, that's a great question, because I don't really have one. I think we have to say, first off, I thought Hemp had moments. Kirby had...
He had some good moments.
Goal-defining moments, at least. The best two chances come as a result of Fran Kirby's assist. I know Stanway got the player of the match, but for me, the back four being solid in a game where the attack wasn't as, I think, fluid as it has been in the build-up. I think to keep a clean sheet with that amount of pressure and leaving out Alex Greenwood for Leah Williamson, you know, defence wins championships, and for that reason I'll pick the back four.
I like that.
There you go. Yeah. That's something you could agree with, Steffi. Who stood out to you?
Well, for sure, Firesinger. She was really trying to coach the team, try to keep them up, try to motivate them. And also Zatratil. She's a fighter, and she's been going back and forth and left and right and trying to keep...
They were so physical second
pressure.
Half, weren't they? I thought they bullied England's midfield in the second half.
Well, we kind of felt like in the end of the first half that they were getting tired. No, they weren't. They were keeping it up the whole time. And these were the two. And also Zinsberger, I mean, she's a good goalie. And she saved 2 or 3 times. And that's important also, you know, for the game. So these would be the three.
A few good showings across the board. It was nice Zadrazil had said before the game, she put out a tweet saying just how much it meant to her to be playing at Old Trafford with a sellout crowd today. I mean, that's also what they're up against. They've got a sellout crowd. They're against the host nation for the opening game. So it was a solid showing from them, given the other...
They started well, to be fair. Yes. I think the first 15 minutes started well, and then against the run of play, England scored, which then settled the game for England. But could have been much different.
So triple change for Serena Wiegmann in the second half. It made you a little bit nervous.
Well, I just felt like I would never do it.
Tell the truth. You nearly threw something at the television, didn't you?
Losing the structure, not being organized, and it was showing, right? I mean, the gap was really getting bigger and bigger, and they were not defending as a team. That made it possible for Austria having that chance. So
yeah, it felt like England going for the second goal, committed a lot of bodies as a result of that.
Risking too much.
Just got stretched back to front. Thought it was a lot of work for the midfield to do as a result of it.
Three on, three off, but 3 points on the board, and they can't be too upset with that.
England off
to a winning start. 1-0 it finished against Austria in the opening game of the Women's Euros.
Thank you very much, Kay. Well, we'll see, won't we? On Thursday, as Norway take on Northern Ireland, we'll be discussing that game on the next edition of the show.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We've been discussing this possible move, haven't we, over the last month or so, but it looks like Chelsea have almost got their man, Raheem Sterling, moving from Manchester City to Chelsea. For more on this, as promised, let's welcome in, shall we? Frank LaBeouf is with us, as is Ali Moreno and Nader Manua. Before we get to you guys, Craig, this seems to make sense, doesn't it, from Chelsea's perspective?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense from their perspective. You've got a player who can play along that front line, centre-forward, if you have to play him there, on the left, on the right, with a striker, behind the striker, still pacey, still fit, still young enough, and got loads of experience. The big question is, he's leaving a monster of a club at the moment, a monster of a team in Man City, who will be challenging on every front again next year, domestically and across the board in Europe. And they've just signed, arguably, one of the two most vaunted players in world football, and Erling Haaland. I keep calling him Alfie. I was calling him Alfie the other day.
Oh, nice.
Sean Shines my age with
age,
his dad.
Age.
No, it's just because I played alongside his dad. But there's a balance in that between there and being maybe a bigger fish in that pond.
Right.
Because if you're asking me now, will Chelsea be challenging all fronts next year? I can't answer that question. I mean, it depends how this transfer window has a continuation for them.
Yeah.
Or if it falls flat and they don't get the players they want. I can't answer that. It's a good deal with them getting Sterling, but they're unlikely to be anywhere close to City and Liverpool, barring they're going to sign another 7 or 8 players.
Nathan, to Craig's point about City, what was interesting, take a look at these stats, and you kind of think Raheem Sterling didn't feature that much. He was a bit part player, really, for City last year. You know, he featured in 47 games. He started in 32. How much are they going to miss him?
Yeah, I think they will miss him, mainly for his presence, you know. But as you can see, the 32 starts is significant. But when they're playing 60 games a season, you start to realise that's not really the sort of ratio for a player who is integral to a side. And I think over the last two seasons, you can kind of see that he kind of became more on the periphery, which was a shame because I think only a couple of years prior, he was second top scorer with Aguero. You know, this is a guy scoring 20, maybe 30 goals a season. But then in, as time passed, before you know it, you'd see Phil Foden on the left, you'd see Grealish on the left. And you wouldn't be thinking about Sterling. You'd think, well, that makes sense. And same things on the right with Mahrez and the like. So I think for him, losing his sort of like almost ultimate status within that team must have been very hard for him. And I think from this Chelsea standpoint now, I think it is a chance for him to arrive somewhere, to be hungry. And he's from West London as well. And it's strange that a guy who's done as much as he's done so far is now having a chance to go and prove himself again and maybe take a team to the highest level. And I'm with Craig. We don't really know what Chelsea's going to look like next season. But in signing someone like Sterling, I think it's a big statement of intent because, you know, he's won what he's won, but he's still driven to win more. He's driven to be the main man. And when he's been the main man in the past, I think he's been very successful.
Frank, with your Chelsea hat on, how do you feel about this?
Well, you know, while the guys were talking, you know, I was wondering, what do I really think about that signing? I mean, kind of in a no man's land where, in fact, in a positive aspect of him signing is the, I always talk about the consistency of the game, and the guy is consistent. He's been playing more than 40 games a season, and he's clearly never been injured. But on the other hand, I feel that you're just adding one frontline player with the others, where I don't know where he stands in that Manchester City, if Guardiola wanted to keep him or not. And on top of it, I don't see any players leaving Chelsea. So what's going to happen? It's only another player with some doubts about his football. I felt that last season, not feeling trusted by Guardiola. Definitely a talented player, but he's not going to get De Bruyne to give him fantastic assist, which I guess he got a lot from. But I don't know. I want to see before judging him. And I'm happy, I would say, because he's a confirmed player. But how he's going to fit to the squad and the Chelsea squad, that I don't have the answer.
Frank, considering his achievements, that's pretty harsh, isn't it? Considering everything he's done at Manchester City, you're saying, well, the jury's kind of still out on Raheem Sterling. He's better than what the Chelsea have amongst their squad at the moment, surely.
You are judging the past, Dan. Of course he's...
Well, how else are we going to judge him, Frank? That's all we can do.
You are judging the past of the Chelsea player and the past of Raheem Sterling at Manchester City. So what's going to happen to him, like the other? We all thought that Havertz, Werner, Ziyech will do fantastically at Chelsea, and they didn't. So we don't know. Allow me to have some doubts about the fact that it's hard right now, when you play in the front line, I didn't mention Lukaku, to sell done. So I want to see before again judging according with every due respect, because he deserves respect. He's a fantastic player, but he was doing great because he was served in a great way. And I just mentioned De Bruyne, but also some other player that I could have said, you know, like Gundogan. I don't know what's going to happen to him next season. Let's be positive, but give me can I put a question mark on the end of the first sentence?
But you mentioned Havertz, you mentioned Werner, Ziyech. Sterling is a proven...
No. All those players come in from clubs that they haven't really... They're not at Sterling's level.
They're not proven commodities in the Premier League.
Timo Werner was a German international or not. I couldn't give a stuff. He came in from RB Leipzig, right? Decent team in Germany. Havertz came in from Leverkusen. Ziyech came in from the Dutch League.
They play in Champions League, Craig. They showed in the Champions League that they were good enough to play in the club.
Raheem Sterling's been playing for England. Raheem Sterling's, whether any of us are fans or not fans or whatever, he's been part of one of the great and most entertaining sides in Man City for the last few years. And he's been a prominent player for England, even when he was looking a little bit off form for Man City before the Euros in 2021. Gareth Southgate said, no, this guy, I know what he can do, and he started. So, you know, he's way ahead of those other players, in my opinion.
Ali, what do you think?
Well, I think it's an upgrade for Chelsea, and I think it's a great option to have. Raheem Sterling is a guy that, yes, has accomplished quite a bit, but we must also say that his role with Manchester City has been diminishing over the last couple of seasons. Now, there is no doubt that Raheem Sterling, when he shows up in that locker room at Chelsea, is going to garner some attention, and a lot of players will be happy to see him, and then other players, not so much, because they know that now their roles are going to be diminished. So I look at a guy like Christian Pulisic and says, okay, hold on a second. They've been flirting with this guy the whole summer. Now he's here in the locker room. What is my role within this team? I think that's a question that's going to happen with a lot of guys at Chelsea, because Raheem Sterling, I think, demands that respect when he comes into the locker room, given the results and given the achievements from the past. And yes, Frank is right. We're judging the past, but we only can say what we have seen from Raheem Sterling. And what we have seen when we criticize, analyze, Raheem Sterling has been a productive player for Manchester City. His role had diminished. He needed a change. He now goes to Chelsea and has a new opportunity. Other guys at Chelsea will now have less opportunities than they did before.
He's just got to have had doubts creeping into his mind. We'll go back to the graphic we had at the start of this segment in terms of the appearances and stuff. If you look at, and I just had a quick look, if you look at the Premier League appearances, now I haven't got exactly starts and subs and blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
But that's 47 games last year. Now he's been, that's still a big contributor, 17 goals, mm-hmm. 8 assists. But if you look back in the Premier League only, for example, in the last few years, he's only one or two, maybe three at most, appearances off where he was. And actually, in 21-22, he made more appearances for Man City in the Champions League than he's ever done. 12, or whatever it was in total. So, yeah, he might be getting a sniff of a manager, yeah, maybe looking at one or two others, blah, 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 but he's still, he is, and I think he still would be a big contributor. I mean, the Champions League, the Holy Grail, well, for some City, for some not, but the Holy Grail for most. And he made more appearances than he's ever done for Man City last year in that competition. That doesn't tell me it's a player that the manager thinks he needs to get out. That just tells me that, you know, it's about rotation, it's about looking after your body, and it's about keeping other people in the squad happy, so that it's not just the first 11 in the dressing room, it's 20 players and they're all getting some game time, like Gabriel Jesus has had, now he's gone to Arsenal. And so it's just got to be a kind of psychological thing in his mind, because when you look at the facts and figures, okay, it may have diminished slightly in certain competitions, but in other key ones it hasn't.
Final point on this, Nate, and what sort of legacy will he leave at City?
I think it's a great one, to be honest. I think when Pep Guardiola first came in, people were expecting Sterling to leave, thinking he's not going to be Pep's style of player. But now, as he leaves, I think he's the player that's played the most games for Pep Guardiola throughout his managerial career. I think we've seen him have so many highs. You know, some people remember some of the lowlights, maybe a miss in the Champions League, a miss here, a miss there, wherever. But he's been, as we said earlier, he's been a very significant part of a very successful era for Manchester City Football Club. And he has not been a peripheral figure throughout that. I think you go back a couple of years, he's getting maybe 20 goals in the league and the like. So I think as far as his sort of legacy, it's a tremendous one. I think as people will look back, they'll say he's had an incredible time. Because when you look at Haaland, you look for Alvarez to come in, you know, if they're to fill his boots statistically, they need to have a lot of very, very good seasons. So for Sterling, I think he's done an incredible job. City have been very successful, and now he can walk away with his head held high because he's been such a consequential player for them in that era.
So it looks like Raheem Sterling will be leaving Manchester. And of course, on the red side, the future of Cristiano Ronaldo is still very much in the air. Third day of him not turning up to training. Of course, Manchester United citing family reasons for him not appearing in pre-season. So much speculation about Ronaldo and about whether or he wants to leave. If United want him out...
Well, he does want to leave. There's no doubt he wants to leave. That's the key. And but you were... I know you've been away, but one of the things that Mark Ogden was saying a couple of days ago was that a lot of the dressing room are very happy
right.
that Ronaldo's leaving. And you know, then we discussed it the other day. That's the biggest embarrassment out of the lot, that he was incredibly annoyed and frustrated at the lack of desire, professionalism, attitude, everything. The slackness that he found when he went back in with most of these sort of wannabes who have all of a sudden got their move to Man United and think that's where it stops. We're getting the big money, we've got the big cars, we're on the big stage, that's where it stops. You ask the previous heroes of that football club, they had a desire to drive on and drive on and drive on and keep winning trophies, and he had that. He goes in there and finds a bunch of jokers, basically. Not everybody, but a lot of them. And so, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt, Daniel, he wants to go. And I would want to go if I was 37. I realised I'd made a mistake going back there, which it was, because it's not the same club. It's a different movie. And he's made that mistake, and he's thinking, 37, how long can the body hang out? How long is it going to take Ten Hag to turn this ship around? I need to find one last big move. So I can't blame him. And hey, he might have to take a monumental drop in wages. But come on, who cares at this stage of his career, the amount of money that man's made? If it's about playing football now, make it happen and get yourself out of that football club.
So, Nadim, 12 months ago, we were sat here, obviously discussing the possibility of Ronaldo going to City. He then chose to return to United, citing the fact that obviously he couldn't turn his back on a club where he really started his career, certainly in England. What does this do to it? Or is all of Craig's points pretty much being the same thing cited by United fans? Or has that affected his legacy at the club?
Personally, I don't think it's affected his legacy at the club, because he came back, and as we can see from the stats, you know, he scored 24 goals. Like, Ronaldo scores goals. They brought him in to score goals, and he did that. And I think as you look around the players, I think he maybe got player of the season. So you couldn't question the fact that he did what they hoped that he would do there. But the downside is, as he arrived back at Old Trafford, he realised, you know, this is very different to the last time I was here. And for as big a club as it is, you know, the nature of it is one that's built on sort of like success. And those players that exist there at the moment, and a mentality and infrastructure around the football club, at this moment in time, it's not really built for that. So for Ronaldo, you know, if he comes in, he scores his goals, and everyone knows about the glaring weaknesses that the playing staff have, and, you know, organisationally, the stuff that they have. If he chooses to leave, I think the fans will understand that, because they almost in some ways, you know, I'm not to put words in their mouth, but they've had one of the greatest players of all time playing for their team in a year when this is one of the worst versions of Man United in Premier League history. So if he says he wants to leave at the age of 37 to go and pursue maybe Champions League football or to try and win something somewhere, I think they'd understand that. I think they would understand that, for as much as it would hurt them. You know, Ronaldo wearing a red shirt for Man United equals goals, and he did that last season. And going into this next year, you know, there's the rebuild at Man United. But do United fans really expect a 37-year-old to be part of a rebuild of a club that might take 3, 4, 5 years to get back to where they want to be? Like, do you want to see Ronaldo at 42 years of age saying, this is it now, we've achieved our goals? I don't think so. So for me, I don't think his legacy is tarnished. I imagine most United fans understand that. And in some ways, most of them probably felt sorry for him last year, because some of the service he was receiving was probably as bad as he's ever received in his career.
Where next, then, Ali?
Oh, well, that's a great question, isn't it, Dan? Well, we've heard Bayern Munich say, yeah, no, we're not in the running. It's tempting. We looked at it. We had conversations, but it's not us. So then you look at, okay, what is a club that could potentially need a striker, need goals, and could want and would want to make this sort of splash? Well, Chelsea. We just mentioned Chelsea. It seems like the perfect match in that you're looking for a guy who can come in and score goals. And what does Nadim say, just mention about Cristiano Ronaldo? He's going to score goals. We know that. And at this point in his career, that is exactly what he has become. Full-on goal scorer, nothing else, nothing more. If that's what you need and that's what you want, that's what he's going to give you. And then if you're a new owner and you have the opportunity to shift the narrative, to change the narrative and the rhetoric about your club because you bring in a player like Cristiano Ronaldo, I think Chelsea would be very, very tempted, and I think it would be very, very hard to turn down the option and the opportunity to have Cristiano Ronaldo walk on that field for you.
Frank?
Well, I agree with Ali. I think it's an opportunity for Chelsea to achieve something fantastic. Having Ronaldo in your club to create history. And again, you know,
what history, Frank? What history are you creating?
Well, you know, you can win stuff with him, and just having Ronaldo is something special. You know, just having Ronaldo, who has been, I think, for the past 17 years, maybe one of the best striker, or if he's not the best striker in the world at the time of him playing. So you want that, and you want that player, and if you can steal it. I'm sorry for the Manchester United fan, to the Red Devils, that's an opportunity you don't want to miss. There is another club who can afford him, it's Paris Saint-Germain, to create that fantastic lineup, you know, with Messi, Mbappé and Ronaldo. And that's maybe the second one who can afford him, and maybe is the only on the left, because Real Madrid, I think it's impossible with the lineup that they have. I don't see him going back to Juventus. Bayern Munich is out of the business. So, yeah. Chelsea is possible. Now, you know, I think there is a curse on the front line at Chelsea again. So let's see what's going on, and let's see if Cristiano Ronaldo comes to the Blues or not.
But it shouldn't be about who can afford them, because he's got to price himself at a price point at this stage. Otherwise, his statements and his management statements have been a lot of nonsense. Mm. It's either about the money or it's not.
Okay.
Is it about the money or is it about the playing time? Is it about the gravitas?
Does Chelsea work, in your opinion?
Well, look at the alternatives. He's not going to stay. He's not going to stay to Liverpool. The only other team that has got half a sniff of putting something together at the moment, although Tottenham have had a good transfer window and Arsenal are creeping up, is Chelsea, potentially. Yeah, he could go to France. He's not going to. Juve obviously got Vlahovic now. It's looking increasingly like that's one of the few options. But don't price yourself out of it.
Right.
If it's about the football, take whatever they offer, whatever it is, do a deal and go and play. World Cups in 4 months. He's talking about Champions League, talking about silverware. That doesn't involve money. He's not a 24, 25-year-old seeking to get 10 years of great earnings. He's been there. He's on the way down. It's just about playing now. That's what he said in his statement. He wants to play. He wants to challenge. His time is running out. So it's not about the money. I get it. He wants to hold out for as much as he can. That's only natural. But do not let, if he wants to play, his monumental salary get in the way of a move, because we've been told it's not... It's not about the money, it's about football. Well, make it happen. Get his management, make it happen.
Maybe a stupid question, Nadim. Ronaldo to Chelsea, does that help or hinder them?
It does feel like a stupid question, but I'm just having to just ponder that for a second.
don't worry, it is.
Okay, if it's a stupid question, then obviously it's a good thing, Dan. Let's roll on to the next one. That's a stupid question. Welcome back.
Are you talking about... Wait, welcome back.
Welcome back.
Welcome back, straight in. Into the top 10 of your all time.
Oh, no,
Everybody's
saying you can't have superstars in the moment. You know, look at the problems
he doesn't cause problems. He went into Man United and there were a bunch of jokers and he got annoyed.
Right.
They brought in an interim manager who had no idea if he was having his dinner or having a haircut. Let's be quite frank, he had no idea. People talking about Ralph Rangnick, this great coach. Jesus, God, never seen a smidgen of it. But you're asking if a player would make a big difference at a club who doesn't have a striker when he's going to score goals. Now,
but it's all about the collective, isn't it? That's why Tuchel won the Champions League, because collectively, Chelsea defended well.
No, they won the Champions League because Man City blew it.
Yes, but it took two to tango.
Correct. Yeah. No, I get that. But Ronaldo's a hard worker. It's a short-term gap for a potential problem.
Right.
I mean, Lukaku's gone. Lewandowski's not going there because he's hankering for Barca. Bayern are saying they're not selling. And who's going to fill the void? There's rumours today they're trying to get Ziyech out, they're trying to get Werner out. They're going to be Hudson-Odoi, one or two more. Somebody's going to have to score goals for this football club. who's it going to be?
Right.
If they don't score... If they can't find somebody to score, are you going to be reliant on Havertz and Werner? Or no?
So you're just going help over hinder?
I think he would just slightly help rather than hinder at the moment.
What? What do you want from me? What do you want from me?
Frank has nothing to say. We've done it. Just a reminder, to keep up to date with all the latest transfer news throughout what's going to be a busy July, you'd imagine, go over to the website and check out Transfer Talk.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Just a reminder, extra time is always available on our YouTube channel. This is from, a couple of days ago where Frank was having a go at Eric Cantona, saying he would be nowhere near his top strikers when looking at Premier League history. And in fact,
hates French people as well.
Yes, eight actors that are better than him.
Dutch,
that's what it
German,
is. Neymar,
Italian,
all of them.
Brits.
Now that provoked this tweet, which said, "Frank, you said you never found it tough to play against Cantona. So who would make it into your greatest Premier League strikers?" So here we are then, Frank's top five. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the old days. That's right. Go on then, Frank. Bring in number five. I thought he'd be higher, Frank.
Well, I do what I want first, you know, and it's not because he's English that they will have to be higher on the list. First, I have to say I did some unworks, and I'm sorry, but Cantona is not for me like Zola or Beckham, a striker. He was a number 10.
Turn the page on Cantona. We're talking about Shearer. Arguably the greatest striker that ever played in the Premier League, in at number five.
Yeah, but you will see the rest of the list before judging my list, you know. I think Harry Kane scored more than half of the game that he played. So it's like a goal every two games, and I love that kind of player. He's completed. I think he's more technical than Shearer. Was a real top scorer, but with all due respect, I think Harry Kane is on top of it. Didier Drogba, because what he did at Chelsea was absolutely exceptional. He had a hard time when he started, and after he was just amazing. It was just amazing. What do you want to go on the second? Jan Rush is, when I started to watch the Premier League, I think a top scorer, a gentleman, typically the guy that you want to avoid when you're a central defender, because he had all the tricks and he simply a legend, simply a legend. And Cherry, because, you know, he became a star. He has his statue at the Emirates. He scored goals after goals. I mean, he said once, I think, "I'm fed up scoring only nice goals. I have to score bad goals," which was true. Every game he was scoring something special. And we call it, when you have a curve from the left to the right, we call it the Thierry Henry's goals. It's how you become a legend. And I think we can consider him as a legend.
Wasn't Shearer and Kane's stats way better than Didier Drogba's?
Well, that's, that's maybe a blues kind of tribute, you know. I know Shearer and Kane were more effective in goals and goal scoring, but I think Didier, what he did was playing at Chelsea was something special. And you see, Lukaku wanted to become Drogba. It's not easy to be a Drogba when you play for Chelsea.
Ian Rush, I think, is a little caveat there, surely, Frank, because most of his goals came in the old First Division, didn't it?
Yes, I know. He didn't score lots of goals at Liverpool when he was playing, comparing to the others. But I think it's just a model, a role model for the rest of the others, and it's why I like him. And I know him as a person. I talk to him a lot. I think he represents what I first saw when I was watching English Premier League, and the Jan Rush, it was simply an example for all strikers, I think.
Why do people have to compile stats from when the Premier League started?
Well, I suppose that's just for a talking point of this, discussion.
Others do. I see it. And it's as if the First Division, when it became the Premier League and Sky Sports get involved in all this,
yes,
did the ball become a different shape, or did the pitch become a different size?
No, I just think for this topic, that's where it kind of
stands. I'm not talking about this topic. I'm talking about a generalisation.
If
other people, you're not going down this route as the producer, so don't kid yourself. Is it because if somebody else jumps off a cliff, would you go, well, I'll jump off it as well? I mean, football was football at top level before the Premier League announced itself as the Premier League.
Yes.
I mean, to suggest, and I'm not, no, we're not doing, for other people to suggest the goals from people are not in the same category before that is just nonsense. Carry on.
Can you accept the fact that Nader made a comment about you giving a stupid question and Craig saying that you made a stupid comment, and you should love me because yet I didn't criticise you for your comeback?
No, that's fair enough. Feel free to criticise.
It's going to be a long summer, Frank. That's all we need to know.
Just for this segment, we're just talking about Premier League players. Naden, Shearer behind Kane.
Yeah, no. So my top five would have been in five. I would have put Harry Kane. Then at four, I'd put Thierry Henry. At three, I'd put Aguero. I'd put Rooney at two, and then Shearer at one.
Wow.
Because at the end of the day, you know, they scored a ton of goals, and for most of those guys, like, they've got a ton of assists as well. And interestingly, the reason I put Kane at five is because he's the only one who hasn't got a Premier League title.
Just want to say something. Shearer, I'm sorry.
Surprise.
Shearer was the captain of England. He was allowed to do whatever he wanted to do in the Premier League game. You know, referee didn't want to do it. He broke my nose twice. I saw him play.
I saw him.
I watched him a lot. And I was very happy to see him in the Champions League final. But I didn't have time to talk to him. He was allowed, like Tony Adams, to do whatever he wanted. Kick people, you know, and keep on scoring. He was a fantastic top scorer. But I barely saw him in the Champions League, so I cannot compare with the others. On top, for the skill internationally, he did with the English team, but with his own club, I didn't see him. I agree with you, Shearer was a great top scorer, but you have to take the whole picture to compare the players. And the players that I put on top of him are players who were involved in the Champions League as well.
Wayne Rooney. Wayne Rooney.
Yeah.
Oh, Sergio Aguero, he might have been involved.
Wayne Rooney, Frank.
Yeah, Wayne Rooney. I'm sorry, I couldn't put it. I only have five seats. But he's a fantastic player. I could have put him. You know why I put Alan Shearer? Because I knew you would be upset if I didn't put him. So, but I wanted to put Wayne Rooney instead. Really.
Listen, we hear you're going to a game tonight in Los Angeles. Save your chat. save your chat for the people sitting next to you at the game.
Hey, yeah, I like these top five lists. They're good, aren't they, Greg?
No, they're not
more,
really, no.
More of these to come.
Are we doing more tomorrow?
I am.
Have we done any of these on Friday?
Oh, you're not working Friday, are you? I thought you were
not for doing any of these lists.
Just a reminder, you can catch up all our videos on our YouTube channel. Be sure to subscribe to ESPN FC.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show.
He take penalties.
Sorry, Benedetto
can't.
That's
done.
Really high, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Blooming
well, at least he knows he's off them.
Be sure to stay tuned. Frank and Nathan back for Extra Time next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Craig Burley with me here in the studio. Nadia Manua and... Nadia Manua is with us, as is...
Something happened on a flight.
What do you mean?
It's affected your vocal cords.
Well, not really.
But what, how come...
I've never been able to speak particularly
You're unable to get the... You can't speak.
I don't know what it is.
It's a bit of a problem going forward.
Talking of problems...
Yeah?
Has this been discussed yet? The picture that you posted on social media.
No. It's gone back.
So what is it and what was it supposed to achieve?
You know, I bought that thing from my lower spine.
Yes, where you attach it to the door and you stretch.
It's a portable lower back traction.
Okay.
I've trapped a nerve in my neck and it's 2 weeks now, it's still bothering me.
Right.
I've been to the Cairo today. So I bought this a week or so ago, maybe less. You pump it, I should have known it was nonsense. You put it on, you pump it up. With your hand, you pump it up and it goes up. And it's supposed to traction.
You should have taken a video of that.
That's a picture.
That's brilliant.
It tractions your neck to traction your spine. However, I found it doesn't work, so I sent it back.
In the picture, it looks like you have a teeth problem, you know, but not a neck problem.
Yeah, it was pushing my chins up. what I found was it layered my chins again and went up. And it wasn't traction on my neck. So I sent it back. They sent me a replacement. I said, I don't want a replacement. So I'm back to searching for a
round. Right, okay.
I need something at home to traction my neck as well as my lower spine. If I encounter a problem, say, over the weekend when I can't just phone up the chiropractor and go. I thought this was it. But it's not.
Oh.
And also, it's a very endearing picture, I think.
It's beautiful, beautiful picture of you, dear, the state of that.
And also, I found it quite difficult to get my glass of wine up.
Okay, for all, were you really happy Dan was away? Frank, obviously our paths didn't cross. You were here in the studio as I went to England.
Yes, I know. You tried to escape from me. You left just before I arrived and you just came back yesterday when I left the day before. So I know it tells a lot about our friendship, but whatever, you know. I put that in my list, you know, and I know and I will remember forever. I was bored without you over there because I love you, but you hate me. That's it, you know.
Oh, that's it.
He didn't seem bored. I'll tell you.
What was he
so
up to?
I didn't know he was in. I remember him saying something about him coming here, but I didn't know. And I was walking along the corridor. It was Saturday, I believe it was. Yeah, it was Saturday. And I was walking along from our office to this part of the building, and I heard them.
Of course you did.
Oh, sorry.
And I
heard them. And he was telling Christina, who's filling in for you.
Yep.
He was telling Christina, I heard them say to Christina about...
I won the World Cup.
Yeah, World Cup, yeah. I heard them saying, 1998, World Cup. And he said, in France, when I go down the coffee shop, I'll put it on top of my head. And I walk about France. And she was loving it. And she thought it was just great.
I mean, of course.
Come back Frankie, she was singing.
She's like, what a story that is.
That's completely lying. That's
a lie. The experience in England of something that you must obviously have to deal with a lot is average speed cameras, which are new, I haven't experienced that much of them. So basically, they take a picture at the start of your journey on the motorway and at the end, work out your average speed during that time, and if you go over it, you get a ticket. It's horrible.
Yeah, it is. Like, normally, you know, not to reveal ourselves too much here, but, you know, when it's a normal speed camera, you know, you just surf it, you go through just nice, the right speed, then off you pop. But then when you've got like 5-10 miles of average speed checks, you're thinking to myself, oh my God, they've literally got me here. But to go back to the question before, Dan, I've got to say, so I realized my place in the ESPN hierarchy this year, and it's because as soon as the season finished, I got no calls. Nobody said they wanted to speak to me. So right. I didn't know that you were really away until just late doors. And I thought, hey. Oh, maybe I should send him a text, see if he's all right. But then lo and behold, here you are. So happy days, eh?
There you are. Beautiful.
Oh, don't worry, Nader. It's not. Don't get paranoid about that. There's none of us wanting to speak to any of us.
That's true.
Those average cameras, right? You think, and then you click, I'll go fast. And
by the way, it's 50 miles an hour, so it's not fast at all.
There's cameras, certainly in Nottingham, before I remember I got done in Nottingham. I was coming back from like Anfield or the north late, and it was like 2 in the morning, and I got done doing 40 miles an hour in a 30, right? And that tipped me over the edge, right? I don't mean literally. I mean, for a ban.
Right, you got banned.
Well, because I went over my points.
Right.
So I went over like 11 points. So I got banned. So I hired this lawyer to get me off, and I gave it the old. He gave it the old. And I went to court. My client. If he gets banned from driving, he's going to have to get on public transport and to get to these games, and everybody knows him, and he's the chances are that he'll get beaten up on the public transport because people hate him. And the judge went, I'll take that into account. He went, banned 6 months. Get on the bloody bus.
Was he a Celtic fan?
It was the wife. Get on the bus. And do you know what? Without the car, oh my God.
Yeah.
Luckily, I had Nigel Jemson, the ex-Nottingham Forest and Sheffield Wednesday player, who lived close to me.
So he drove you around?
Pretty much.
What a treat that is.
I told you this. And every time we pulled into the golf club and all the lads were there, I used to roll down the window and say, I've got my driver, Gemmo! And he always used to say, if you say that once more, I'm not picking you up.
Right. So
it won't. You ever been 6 months without a car?
No, well, not.
Ooh.
No. Right. So, should we talk about football?
We don't have cameras here so much, do we?
No, we don't. No. It's more the state police waiting.
Yeah.
Last point, Frank. Are you having dinner with Del Piero tonight, did you say?
I texted him and he didn't answer yet. So
he's blocked you.
Maybe he blocked me. Maybe he wants to avoid me like you did. Or maybe he's back to Italy for a holiday. So I will give him the benefits of the doubt. But not for long.
He's in LA. He's going to a game tonight. Why would you?
I think that's this weekend he's going.
Oh, this weekend. Why would you? How much do you think it would take to get me to go to your game? How much money?
I don't know, Craig.
Guess. Give a figure, and I'll tell you.
I don't think there is.
Give a figure, and I'll tell you.
There's not a figure. I know you. There's not. I could say $1 million.
No, I'd go for $1 million.
Would you?
Yeah, I'd just sleep during the game. I mean, I'll give a realistic figure, and I'll tell you if I'd go.
Okay, so I think he's going to, El Trafico?
El Trafico?
Yes.
Well, I can't go because of the traffic. El Trafico, what a name. Go on, give me a figure. I'll tell you if I'd go.
20.
20,000?
20 grand you'd go.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Yeah, I think that's where we're at. Okay, right.
10, no.
Away from big shots.
10.
Did Frank really say it's tougher to win the Euros than the World Cup, really? Then why was the World Cup victory his number one favourite moment?
Because it's worldwide. As simple as that, and it's not only the Europe, that's it, because he has a better, because the viewers are bigger, because everything is bigger.
Why is the Euros tougher then?
Because you don't have, and with all due respect, any exotic national teams. That's what it is. When you play in Europe, you only have top teams. It's not like
Scotland, we're in the last Euros.
Yeah, when you play in the world, we play against Saudi Arabia and when we won the World Cup, you know. So you don't have that in Europe. For the first game, it's going to be tough.
At the end, you've still got to play Brazil or Argentina. You still got to face, the juggernauts of world football.
So it's if you win, it's 7 games, I think, in the World Cup. You can have like 2 or 3 games where you can even put the B team, let's say, where in Euro, you cannot. It's seven tough games.
Look at England. England got to the final of the Euro. So they beat Germany.
No, but you don't hear me. Before, in the group stages, have the chance to rest your team because it's not as tough as it is during the Euro, the whole tournament long. It's nicer to win a World Cup. It's tougher to win a Euro.
Thoughts, Nathan?
I kind of see where he's coming from, to be honest. It's a different sort of makeup to get to it. Because I think at the last World Cup, I think England were playing was it Honduras or something like that? Or Panama? Panama. That's in the group stage. So in some ways, Panama deserved to be there. But the makeup of the top sort of teams on the world stage versus the other ones who qualified from their section, it's not quite the same. So I understand what Frank's trying to say. And I'm going to agree with him because he's my senior pro and I will follow him to the end.
Oh, my goodness. Your anti-CONCACAF ways, Nathan.
I love you, Nathan. I love you.
Yeah, of course, of course.
Ukraine, Denmark, Germany. Who's England beats gets the Euros?
Yeah, good luck.
What do you mean?
That's how they got to the final.
They only played 3 games.
I don't know. That's what he just told me. I'm just
that's wrong.
I'm just saying.
Ukraine what?
In the knockout rounds.
Ukraine what?
Denmark, Germany.
Oh, no, thanks.
Right, in which era of your respective... This is an interesting question. In which era of your respective playing careers were the uniforms most comfortable? I've seen short shorts, collared shirts, baggy uniforms. They all looked awful retrospectively. Are the current uniforms of clubs, countries the most comfortable they've ever been? Does it matter?
Well,
wow.
I don't know. I've never tried them on.
When you played, though...
Yeah, but it's asking me... It's asking, not asking me, are the current uniforms of club countries the most comfortable they've ever been? I've never, well, how do I know?
Okay.
I've not had the freaking things on. So how do I know what they
might... It's just because someone's asking a question, get angry at them.
Well, I mean, how are you going to answer that
question? Nathan, you retired the latest out of this group.
Okay, so from when Craig and Frank were playing, I think it was a bit baggier. So some people would say that is comfortable. And then as time passed, like the materials changed, but it became a bit tighter. Because then, you know, everyone remembers, I think it was the Cameroon team with the Puma kit, which is basically spray on. But you need to be a certain type of athlete for that. So some teams went that way, but in the end they pulled back. And now I would say overall, it's pretty comfortable because they're trying to go for the whole technology route and all that stuff. So I'd say it's more comfortable now, but then also the people within it are sort of built in a different way.
See, I would have fitted in that spray tan thing. If you looked at me in that neck, brace, traction thing, I fit the really tight things well.
Shaka looked like he was wearing a poncho, didn't he, when he was playing? He said he always liked...
Listen.
He'd always go extra large.
Shaka's a goalie, he could have given him anything.
Right.
But everything was a bit baggier, but it's comfortable. I don't know.
Right.
Comfortable? What's comfortable? I'm not playing today. I'm not playing today, Gaffer. I'm not very comfortable. That's very 2022.
But like in the 70s, you think like I remember seeing pictures of Maras when he was playing in those Arsenal shorts.
The tight ones.
There wasn't
what
much.
I can tell you is obviously the pitches were much different.
Yes.
Right. That's a big difference. Not.
All right. Okay. We're not talking about the pitches.
Well, you're asking me if wearing clothing.
Well, you just said no. That's fine.
I'm going to answer that question.
What do you think?
I think at the time.
That's a more prominent question.
The era before us, I think it was dangerous because of the short shorts that could have been dangerous for me. but after, I think it was very comfortable at the time that I played because there was XXL, you know, kind of shirt. I tried, Rüdiger in the semi-final of the Wembley game offered me a shirt after the game. I mean, it's very tight. It's very technique. Okay, it's very technique. It's very nice, but it's very tight because they want to show their muscles. So it's not very comfortable in a way because they get the S muscles. So, you know, they take S like that. You see everything. But I think it's very... Our time was nice. XXL, comfortable. You know, we can move. Yeah. The only thing is we have to put the shirt inside the shorts. Otherwise, it was a yellow card.
Really?
Really? Really?
Yeah. I think as well, with your shirts from back then, I think it was all comfortable until it rained, then you'd just be drowning in fabric. I think that's the difference now. Yeah. Whereas some of these more modern ones, like, if you get wet, it doesn't really make any difference.
Mm. Is that really a bookable offence?
What's that? Am I a referee?
No, I'm your shirt. We knew you played. No, I'm your shirt.
I can't remember.
I'm sure that's not true.
I can't remember.
Yeah, that's true, that's true.
Nathan.
I tell you what, this is tight.
I'm sensing a theme.
Oh yeah, I know that. I need to. There's at least 10 has to come off.
Nathan, what was it like to share a locker room with Yaya Toure? Tell us more about his presence on and off the pitch, as you're someone who has seen him firsthand.
Well, I saw him firsthand for about 6 months. Let's not put too much on my career there. You know, I was very much out the door by the time he was rising to his peak. But he's a really nice guy, and I did some work with him earlier this year as well. Ooh. He's really funny, lighthearted, enjoys just playing the game, and he's just a positive influence, and he's so casual, yet brilliant at the same time. He was one of probably one or two players who I played with where, like, if they played well, you felt confident you were going to win because there was no matchup for him on the other side. So he was a really good guy and an absolutely incredible player. And he sort of took training to a different level because if he was on it, as I say, you could do as much as you could. But at the end of the day, he'd probably come up short.
But then why, obviously, as a brilliant player he was and what he did at City, also on that list is birthday cake gate?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know about any of that stuff, to be honest. It's all very, very strange. And even earlier in the year, when I spoke to him, he thought that he wasn't welcome back at City. But then I said, all the staff, they love you. The fans, they love you. You know, they right. want to see you back up here. So maybe there's a bit of a misunderstanding there. And obviously, like, maybe he doesn't really want to rectify it, but I hope that he does at some point because people are desperate to see him back in Manchester. Because right at the minute, I think he's probably coaching for Spurs, which really threw me off because he'd be more than welcome to come back up north.
Oh. Birthday cake, huh?
Do you remember that?
Slightly.
There you go. Okay.
Why is people defined... By the way, I've been sitting here when the boys have been talking, worrying about what we're going to do for the next few weeks.
Okay, right. Well, we're just going to answer some questions for now. Will Gaultier, Frank, have the guts to bench Neymar and Messi if they perform like how they did last season?
Hopefully, yes. I mean, he's there for that. I think he's been picked because he wants to show his character, and he has a character. Of course, he never coached at that level with top players, but he showed that that he has the guts to do some choices, and I think he's been picked for that because that's the thing that they want to resolve in the dressing room, making sure that everybody is treated the same way and he can be a so-called lesser good player and a big star that would should be the same. So hopefully he's going to do the same. If Neymar is not good or Messi is not good or Mbappe is not good, he will bench them.
Has he replied to your text, Frank?
Yes, he did. And today, yesterday I sent him a text again because it was confirmed. And I say, I'm very pleased. So if you need me again, don't hesitate. And he say, well, happy to see you very soon.
Yes. Need you for what? Yeah. Need you for what, Frank?
It's none of your business, you know. You won't understand.
I tell you what, though, it's not going to be easy for him, Frank, is it? I mean, I'm surprised. Managing the French rugby union team and PSG. Oh. That's going to be difficult, isn't it?
Why is he doing the rugby team as well?
Gaultier, there's some coach there, is he not?
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh. It's double bubble.
Well, maybe it's different people. Right, final...
Well, there's only one Gaultier in France, isn't there?
Final question. Rank in terms of first touch, Frank. Zidane, Berbatov, Bergkamp.
Oh, I love Berbatov. Oh, such a fantastic player.
Oh.
Hmm.
Well, no, it's not you. Who is it hits? Oh, no, it was Gab.
Oh.
He hits
Bergkamp. I go with Berbatov, Zidane and Bergkamp.
Oh, wow.
Beckham?
Berbatov, Bergkamp and Zidane, Bergkamp. Not Bergkamp.
Bergkamp.
Yeah, they've all got great. I would say Bergkamp first.
Oh, yeah?
Remember the touches for...
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, I won't go into it then.
That'll be a first.
You've remembered.
Neynum?
What are we going to do in the next 3 weeks?
Shut up.
All right.
Again, I think I'm going to have to go to my senior pro. I think Berbatov was special. And then I think he said Bergkamp to Zidane, so I'll go with that.
That's it. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We will be back tomorrow. Unfortunately, Craig has a day off. How on earth will we cope without the constant interruptions?
You'll cope with the... There'll be other... No, there won't be.
Be sure to join us then.
I don't know what the hell will be in.